This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Deep dive on some earnings news. Personal Finance Wednesday. This is known as divorce season. Also, how the China virus may impact things globally, especially for business travelers. Sales of existing homes rose just over 3.5% from November to December. That's according to the National Association of Realtors. Let's look behind the numbers with the help of Steve Kirch. He's Assistant Managing Editor at MarketWatch here in Chicago. Steve, so is this a good number, rising 3.5%?
Good afternoon, Cisco. Yeah, the book a trend line where we were seeing sales decline at least in the Chicago area, over the last 15 months. So it was a good number locally. It was a good number to see those sales nationally. It could be better, though, because we have an inventory shortage still, both especially nationally, but Chicago's a little more balanced in that regard. But overall, with where interest rates are and where sales are, the housing market is in pretty good shape.
So do we see, if there is an inventory problem, are we seeing housing prices going up, kind of the supply and demand thing?
That's definitely driving the median price increase was almost 8% this month nationally, and Chicago and the metro area also finally seeing some good price gains year over year, 9% in the city and almost 13% in the metropolitan area overall. So yeah, that lack of inventory is driving prices up. That's good news if you happen to want to be selling your home. It's not such good news if you're a buyer, although you are getting that offset with the mortgage rates that are still very low by historical standards.
Yeah, those mortgage rates have to be at least leading some people to get off the fence. I think some were wondering how much lower they were going to go, but it looks like they've stabilized.
Yeah, I think that's, I think we saw about 3.75% as the average closing rate here in Illinois in December. Again, anything under 4% is going to be a good number. But still, even if you can get that mortgage and get that good number, your choices in the market are still limited in an awfully lot of areas.
As prices climb, again, we touched on supply and demand, as prices climb, is there a chance that that has some people getting off the fence in selling their homes? Maybe they needed the prices to go up before they could do it.
That's certainly a possibility. It does, though, seem like, especially nationally, we have a bigger trend of people just not willing to move. The job market, as good as it is, there just doesn't seem to be quite as much mobility. And people in Illinois, anyway, as I'm sure we've all reported the numbers of the outflow of population. I mean, that's, people may be looking to buy or jump in, but they might not be looking to buy in Chicago.
Thanks so much. Really good analysis. Steve Kirch, Assistant Managing Editor at MarketWatch here in Chicago. Just ahead, a look at the global economic picture and how geopolitics is playing a role in that. Also a reminder, a podcast of the Noon Business Hour always available on the radio.com app. President Trump heading home after attending the World Economic Forum in Switzerland. Let's talk about it. Paul Christopher, Head of Global Market Strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute, based in St. Louis. Paul, it's always good to have you with us. So the president's on his way home. So what happens here? I mean, is Davos pretty much just leaders talking? Is there any movement? Do we have any deals made? I mean, what really goes on there?
Oh, the potential for deals is always there, but nothing this time. In fact, we have the White House recently talking about or rattling sabers again on raising tariffs on European autos. That might be the next fight for the U.S. We don't think that's necessarily going to turn into the same kind of problem as with China, but Davos tends to be just leaders talking.
Well, talk about that, the potential for tariffs on U.K. cars. What's going on there?
So the U.S. wants to wedge open the door and get more U.S. agricultural and energy imports into Europe. The problem is the Germans are already set up to buy gas from the Russians. In fact, the Germans helped finance the pipeline from Russia into Western Europe. So the Germans are pretty well set there. And the French farmers, of course, don't want U.S. farm products competing with their own. And they have complaints about things like genetically modified crops and things like that. And those are the excuses thrown up as a way to keep the U.S. products out the door. And the president now means to perhaps push the Europeans a little harder by threatening tariffs on cars made in Europe and sold to the U.S., pressure them to open that door and let those energy and U.S. ag products be sold more in Europe.
As you mentioned, though, it sounds like that's a difficult swing, not only because of the unpopularity of those moves in Europe, but also because of just some of the deals that they already have locked in.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be difficult. The European farmers, especially the French, have a very comfy situation with subsidies and small markets and almost monopolist suppliers. And they don't want the U.S. coming in with our big product and our big competition to compete with them.
President Trump, totally understandably, touting the U.S. economy while he was at Davos. As you're looking around the world at various economies, does he have a point that the U.S. economy is outperforming and sort of leading other economies?
Yeah, throughout this 10-year recovery or expansion, the U.S. has been the most steady, the most reliable, the most positive. The Europeans have already had a recession, so have the Japanese during the last 10 years. They're both struggling, the Japanese and the Europeans, with very weak manufacturing sectors. Ours is not strong either, but fortunately, ours is still better off than theirs. So I think if you compare them all straight up, the U.S. is still a little bit better.
So if you have things like the Phase One deal with China, more agricultural products sold, does that do anything to keep the U.S. economy moving, or is that just too small a part of the economy?
No, it's a big part of the economy, especially in terms of how it affects sentiment. You know, if you have some companies in your economy being hit with tariffs, then other companies might say, well, gee, maybe we don't want to invest or build new factories either because tariffs might eventually come to us. So as soon as you start removing those tariffs, that sigh of relief is palpable. It's audible, and you can start to hear the companies gearing up to do a little bit more investment across the board here in the U.S. So, you know, we think that the Phase One deal is a very important thing for sentiment here in the U.S., and that's going to be a positive this year.
Is there a threat as some of these other economies struggle, the IMF saying sluggish global growth, that's the prediction. Does that end up affecting our economy? Because if other economies are struggling, well, they're not going to buy as much of our stuff.
There's a point there, but that's sort of already been factored in, especially when you think about financial markets like equities. Everybody knows that Europe is weaker. Everybody knows that Japan is weaker. Everybody knows that manufacturing has had a rough time but is bottoming now. But the U.S. is probably still in the lead. And as for the IMF, well, their downgrades are mainly on the emerging markets, the developing market side, and principally big countries like India that aren't going to probably do as well as previously thought this year. But that doesn't mean that the rest of the world is slipping into recession. We're all growing slowly. It's just some are growing more slowly than others, and the U.S. is probably the cleanest dirty shirt on the line.
Paul Christopher, always good analysis. He's the head of global market strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Thanks for being with us. Just ahead, a look at how the coronavirus in China may impact international travelers.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The outbreak of a virus in China is not only having an impact there, but all across the globe. That includes Chicago, where passengers traveling to O'Hare from that Chinese city will face screening. Let's look at some of the economic implications with Vildana Heyrich, a business reporter at Bloomberg based in New York. Vildana, thanks for being with us. Are we talking really about business travelers here and how that might be interrupted?
Well, we are seeing some interruptions from the likes of Chicago, from Atlanta, but the main takeaway that investors are seeing from this is that the U.S. and China are actually taking steps to sort of try to rein in some of the fears that are swirling around the outbreak of the virus. And a lot of investors I've been speaking with are actually saying this is a good sign that there isn't anybody who isn't taking this seriously, which is why we're seeing stocks up today as some of those fears recede.
Yeah, in spite of obviously the back and forth as the trade war has gone on, both countries can work together.
Exactly.
So let's talk about the, I guess, implications at the different airports. Obviously, it's just going to be a little bit of a challenge for people moving through as they get screened for this.
Yes. So we are seeing some screenings at some of the major airports across the country. And, of course, we have the first case of a U.S. patient that helped Fox sell off yesterday. But, again, those fears really are receding a little bit more today as more and more people realize that maybe this won't be as bad as feared.
With technology, obviously, everyone is online now. Does that maybe negate the impact, the negative impact of something like this, as opposed to, say, 20 or 30 years ago? Because people can just get online and communicate.
They can, but we actually looked at some cases of how the stock market, for example, reacted back when we had the outbreak of the SARS virus or when we had Ebola fears. And for the most part, stocks would sell off, but it would be very short lived. You could also make the case that with the spread of information being so quick on the internet or getting constant notifications on your phone, that actually that's helping sort of fan the fear a bit more, in that it's heightening fears and giving people more anxiety about what's going on. So I think the case could be made for both instances.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the spread of information can certainly go both ways. Yeah, good insight. Thank you, Vildana Heyrich. She is a business reporter at Bloomberg based in New York. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, working through the money aspects of divorce.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Netflix issues its latest earnings report as competition in streaming intensifies. Personal Finance Wednesday, navigating the tricky financial waters of divorce. The legalization of recreational marijuana in Illinois has prompted increased applications for medical users. And the president's impeachment trial resumes. Following a long and contentious night, a special report from CBS News is next. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 70, the NASDAQ is up 53, and the S&P is up 10 points. Oil is down nearly 2.5%. 28 degrees in Chicagoland, 12:31.
CBS News Special Report.
Senate will convene as a court of impeachment. The chaplain will lead us in prayer.
Day two of the Senate impeachment trial is just getting underway. The House prosecutors have begun their opening arguments. Lead House Manager Adam Schiff explained why impeachment is an important part of the U.S. Constitution.
The framers of the Constitution worried then, as we worry today, that a leader might come to power not to carry out the will of the people that he was elected to represent, but to pursue his own interests.
Washington State Democrat Patty Murray said Republicans are derailing a fair trial.
They said no to allowing the president's key aides to testify, no to allowing documents that could shed light on the president's actions.
South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham.
Yesterday was about 11 hours of them telling us how bad their case was, in my view.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Pam Coulter.
WBBM News Time, 12:32. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets are a little higher now. Let's talk about it. We're joined by Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management in Greenwich, Connecticut. Vahan, as you're looking around Wall Street today, what do you make of what you're seeing?
Hi, Cisco. Well, we're having a market that's continuing to be pretty strong. Everybody right now is focused on Davos, and we're having a lot of optimistic comments coming out of there about the state of the global economy, not just the U.S. economy, that things look pretty good. And so the stock market is reacting favorably.
So do you see anything, that makes you think that this run is going to end or that it's just going to slow? I know a lot of people in their gut say it can't last forever, but as far as data goes, what do you see?
Well, absolutely, that's correct. It can't last forever. This run will end. Of course, it's impossible to tell when. The market could go much higher before it finally stops going up or perhaps even sells off. Looking at it from the perspective of the economy, looks pretty good. There's decent growth out there, very low unemployment rate. We have very strong housing numbers. Consumer spending is very strong. So there's nothing that seems on the horizon that could really cause the rally to end. A couple of my concerns are inflation. You know, the Fed has been lowering interest rates, and it could be caught by surprise if inflation, which right now is extremely tame, were to suddenly come in at much higher than expected levels. And the other thing that I'm very concerned about, I think it's a longer-term concern, is the massive amount of debt in the economy, both at the government level and also at the corporate level. We have a tremendous amount of debt. Eventually, that debt will have to be rolled over. And if interest rates go up much higher, we're going to have a big problem. But right now, everybody's ignoring that.
Yeah, well, it seems like they ignore it as long as things keep rolling along in the economy. Right. But when there's a downturn, that's when you can't ignore it.
That's correct. You know, the U.S. government, for example, issues a tremendous amount of relatively short-term debt. You would think that with interest rates so low, it would make more sense to issue very long-term debt so you don't have to worry about rolling it over at higher interest rates when it matures. So I do have some concerns that as interest rates tick up, the interest portion of the budget is going to become a bigger and bigger component.
When we're looking at earnings season, it's still early in earnings season, but what are you, any positives there?
Well, you know, earnings season is always usually pretty good because you see a lot of companies reducing their expectations before they actually announce the earnings. So as a result, approximately 70% of companies on average tend to beat the earnings estimates. But yeah, we are getting some pretty good results. I was very encouraged, for example, by IBM's results, which were announced yesterday after the market closed. IBM, of course, has been really out of favor. It's been actually one of my favorite stocks because it's been so out of favor. I've been accumulating it in the low 130s. It pays a great dividend. And yesterday we saw that they beat the earnings expectation. They beat the revenue expectation. They actually generated some revenue growth, and the guidance was pretty good. My biggest concern about IBM is the Red Hat acquisition. This acquisition really helped their results. However, they did pay $34 billion for Red Hat. I'm not sure that was a bargain, and I think it'll take a couple of years before we find out whether they overpaid or not.
And that stock up right now about 3.25% today. Let's talk about the Coca-Cola CEO. He's feeling pretty good about the American consumer.
Yes, he is. He said the consumer is very strong, and the consumer indeed is very strong. And that's important because if you look at the GDP numbers, consumer spending makes up approximately 70% of GDP. So if consumers are spending and they're feeling good, as they should when the unemployment rate is so low, it makes it, you know, much less likely that we would see a recession on the horizon.
The key there, though, is for the consumer not only to be doing well, but to feel as though they're doing well.
That's correct. That's right. But when people have jobs and they feel confident that they won't get laid off anytime in the near future, they tend to spend more. And with the stock market going up, they're seeing their 401k plans and IRAs going up, so they tend to be more confident.
Given the fact that, as you touched on earlier, seems like the economy is going forward at a decent clip, not turning around anytime soon, what's your advice to investors based on that?
I would say remain invested right now. You might want to do some rebalancing. You should always focus on your asset allocation. Nobody should be, 100% in stocks. You should also hold some other assets. But your equity portion of your portfolio has probably grown. So you might want to trim back a little bit to get back to your target allocation.
Good stuff. Thank you so much. Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management, based in Greenwich, Connecticut. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, strategies to deal with money in a divorce.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. This afternoon, we're focusing on financial strategies in divorce at a time of year when many couples officially call it quits. Sarah Newcomb, Director of Behavioral Science at Morningstar here in Chicago. Sarah, you may not know this, but I'll just ask. Any idea why this time of year seems to be bigger for divorces?
Yeah, actually, I do. From the financial planners that I've spoken with, it's because the holidays are times that couples will try to make it through. And generally from December through February, they start getting calls from the people who were disappointed over the holiday and decided that was the last straw. So this is known as divorce season in the financial planning world.
Disappointed, like didn't get the gifts they want? Or I assume it's probably more than that.
Probably a bit more than that. I think, you know, we often can look to those holidays as the times that may bring us back together. And when disappointed in that area, we decide it's time to move on.
All right, good. There's enough pressure at Christmas time, so that's good. all right. So if they do decide that they are going to split and they're going to divorce, what are some things that they have to keep in mind here from a financial planning standpoint?
Sure. Well, so first of all, I want to say there is no right answer to this question. But as someone who focuses on the psychology of financial decisions, I think there are two really important things to consider when it comes to money and being part of a couple. Number one is that if you can divorce-proof your relationship ahead of time by adopting a yours, mine, and ours approach to money, where you combine the bills that need to be combined, but you allow for separate financial identities throughout your relationship, then making that transition back to financial independence will be easier. If you haven't been able to do that, what a lot of financial planners will start to see around this time of year is people starting to move money into other accounts in order to prepare for an upcoming split. So if this is something that you think in your relationship might be on the horizon, you may either want to watch for money moving out of your joint accounts or start talking about how to help one another prepare for the next phase. Divorces are a long process, and that is to your benefit when it comes to finances, because it's a very, very difficult time in life. There's a grieving process that goes on. And just like with death, financial planners would prefer that you not make major financial decisions when you're in the throes of emotion. So if there are ways that you can buffer your finances to get through a few months of transition and then make some of those major choices about splitting assets, that's a better way to do it.
So it seems like a cooling off period of sorts. You know, you just take it easy. Don't rush through this. There's a lot of big decisions to make.
Exactly. When it comes to being blended financially, there are a lot of moving pieces. And obviously, the more assets that you share together, the more difficult it will be. But divorce is already difficult in most cases. And there is a large life transition happening. And I think that people often, what will happen is, in order to just get the process over, they will often give up far more than they need to. Or if they feel guilty about being the one to instigate a divorce, they will often give up far more than they need to. And so if there's any way that you can create a buffer for yourself of a few months to be able to do some of the emotional transition first and then work out the details of the financial transition, that's the best way to go.
Anything to think about in regard to taxes when you're divorcing?
Well, I'm not a tax expert myself. I will say that I have seen a number of people make bad financial decisions just for the purpose of avoiding taxes. So watch out for that. I think when you're splitting a life, taxes aren't the most important thing to think about.
Interesting. Thank you so much. Good advice. Sarah Newcomb is Director of Behavioral Science at Morningstar here in Chicago. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday, still to come. How Netflix is faring in an increasingly competitive market.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The latest earnings report from Netflix is a mixed bag, and the stock is sinking. Netflix stock down right about 3% today. Let's break it down with the help of Tom Lason, Seattle-based media analyst. You can find him on Twitter, at Tom Lason. All right, Tom, kind of give us the nuts and bolts here. What's going on with Netflix?
Well, competition is what's happening. And, you know, we've talked about this before. This industry is going through the cycle that most industries like it do. We're in a maturation process right now as new competitors like Disney Plus and NBC and soon AT&T's Warner Media and HBO Max coming in May. As those competitors come into the marketplace, it is harder to retain share, and it is a battle for share. And not only that, but there's also the issue, too, of pricing power. Where is this point that you start to see resistance amongst new subs? Netflix did raise prices in 2019, so that's providing a little resistance, too. So I don't think this is surprising or unexpected. You know, they have to work two sides of the balance sheet. One is, you know, new subs, and the other one is continuing to make a major outlay for original programming, and that is not inexpensive.
Is there a point where domestic subscriber growth, there's just a limit to it? I mean, there's a ceiling. There's only so many people they're going to be able to get to subscribe.
Absolutely, and we've talked about this too, that most of the opportunity for now, it looks like it's going to be overseas. The other guys haven't rolled out overseas. Disney Plus isn't there, so that opportunity exists internationally. And once you get into the domestic marketplace in North America, yeah, now you're talking about a battle for share. I think subs can be increased. Right now, Netflix is something like 60% penetration on pay TV, which isn't huge, but it's not going to be 100% because, again, you run up against people who don't want to pay for it or who are paying for Amazon Prime and other things. So it's not an unlimited supply, and yes, we will bump against those limits at some point.
So is there a sign, maybe it's too early, is there a sign that when all is said and done, you have all these different streaming options, that Netflix will be that sort of foundational streaming option? Everyone has Netflix, and then they decide to cherry pick which of these other services they want.
I think you could make that argument that they were first to the marketplace, that their name is synonymous like Kleenex or Xerox with the product itself. And you might get to the point where an over-the-top service is called Netflix almost generically. So I think you could make that possible argument that they will become part of basic packages or become included in smart televisions as promotional efforts by other companies. I think that's a reasonable expectation that could happen, but it's not guaranteed. There is going to at some point going to be consolidation. There's going to be winners and losers, and expenses and cash bleed is going to play a role in that.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you, Tom Lason. Good information. You can find Tom on Twitter at Tom Lason.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.